Save big on all your Halloween needs, all in the Kroger app. Mix and match 5 or more on Powerade, Campbell's Soup, Bar-S Franks, and more for 99 cents each with your card. Then get tender, fresh Heritage Farm boneless chicken breasts for $2.29 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
BSM presents The Tim Meisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Meisberg Show.
Good morning. Happy Tuesday to you. Welcome into a new day here on the program. As Ceci told you, a chilly morning, but not a bad one out there. Hope your day is starting off well, and if not, we'll do our best to change it for you. So I also hope that you had a pretty good Columbus Day, and Indigenous Peoples Day, whatever you choose to observe it as, and however you chose to observe it. Whether it was working like me or having the day off and doing something. But yeah, I was here not as late as usual. I got out about 5. Did a little thrifting and then went home, ate dinner and relaxed before bed. But I saw a story that, there was a story that I wanted to get to yesterday that we just ran out of time on. About fake foliage photos and how that is fooling some people into making a trip somewhere. And when they get there, it doesn't look quite like it does in the photos. Now, there's a lot to that. Obviously, it's not going to look exactly like the photo anyway, because the photo is in the past. It already happened. By the time you get there, conditions will be different. But this is a more interesting change. And then also, while we're talking about things that are fake, well, I mean, how fake is it? Because there's a story about a Massachusetts student who his family is now suing his high school after he was accused of cheating when he used AI to help complete a paper. And what is the future of the utilization of AI? I can tell you that I've learned to use AI for things. But I've also learned that you can't rely on AI either. It's nice as a tool, but I wouldn't use it as an end-all be-all. But what is the ethical use of AI? So, for example, This is just an example here, but all of what we call imaging in radio, which is when we come back from a commercial, it's like, now back to the Tim Meisberg Show. Like all those things, I only have so many ideas in my head for those. To write it for my show, for Chris, for Barry, for the weekend shows, I've only got so many ideas in my head before it starts to sound repetitive. And I want to freshen those up every now and then. And so what I've normally done is I've asked, you know, Michael Rock, who's been doing this for a long time, Jason Kent, who's been doing this for a long time, like, hey, what do you guys have for ideas for some of these ideas, you know? But last month, I was just messing around with AI, and I said, you know, write some radio imaging based on the fact that it's in this city and this person of this political leaning is the host. And I got some ideas. Now, I didn't use any of them, but I saw how it can help. That's just one example. And it's not anything that I'm claiming to be my own. Another thing that I messed around with AI is I wrote, tell me some of the legends of the Bridgewater Triangle. Just to see what it pulled up as being some of the more popular stories. I've already got the stories all in my files. I don't need the information from AI. But I utilized it to tell me kind of like a ranking so that when I go out and present these stories that I've already done the research on myself and gathered personal experiences with and all of that, it kind of helped me build the tension of the story based on the popularity of those legends. Because I always start strong. I always start with the redheaded hitchhiker of Route 44, and I always finish up with Lizzie Bordenhouse. Because I want to get them right away, and I want to wrap up with the one everybody knows the most. But the stuff in the middle, I usually change depending on the location of where I'm at, what's closest to them. But I used AI to give me kind of a ranking of what stories people were talking about. So these tools can be effective. But you've got to be, you know, when the situation calls for it, you've got to be upfront about it. And I guess this student used it for help with research, but it didn't write the paper for him. It didn't, and the details aren't in the story about how the AI was used necessarily. But they're saying, his parents are saying, and the lawyer for the parents is saying, he didn't cheat. He's just saying that he used it to help in the research and that the school did not have a policy about utilizing AI. So how can they punish him for something they didn't have a policy against in the handbook already, that they added it after the fact? I think that's a word I'm looking for here. Disingenuous proposal. I mean, I don't think it matters if it was in there or not, if he had used it for purposes of plagiarism, but they're saying that he did not use it for plagiarism. His lawyer, well, the family's lawyer, Peter Farrell, said, there's a wide gulf of information out there that says AI isn't plagiarism. Well, it is and it isn't. If you took something that AI wrote and pass it off as your own, that's still plagiarism. The same way if you took anything off the internet and pass it off as something that you wrote, it's plagiarism. Is it not plagiarism, though, if it was research done by AI? So rather than you going and poring through books, like let's just say you were looking for the story of a particular pilgrim family. Rather than go through 150 books and try to find that particular story, you could just ask AI, tell me about the family of, you know, insert pilgrim's name. Thomas Billington. And then it will bring you back the information about Thomas Billington. Then you can ask AI, where did you find this information? And where I find it interesting is sometimes you ask it, where did you find this information? And it can't answer that question. And if that's the situation, I don't trust that information. But if it can give me a link, then I'll go and I'll explore the information from that site to make sure that AI got it right. Because it's not 100%. Another example of that is, you know, people have been using Wikipedia now for 20 years for research on things. We have writers here that have written things where they've cited Wikipedia, and I've told them, like, no, don't cite Wikipedia. Wikipedia is an aggregator of information. Find where the information is notated. I mean, they're not plagiarizing, they're citing. But I'm saying you don't cite Wikipedia. Citing Wikipedia is like writing, it's like trying to quote Shakespeare, but instead quoting Shakespeare from the Cliff's Notes version of that play. It'd be like writing to be or not to be. That is the question. And then putting in parentheses, you know, Cliff's Notes to Hamlet, page 61. Like, no, just go back to the original Hamlet and cite that. So when you go to Wikipedia, it has all of those little notations, all those little superscript numbers that you can click on, and it brings you down to the bottom of the page to where the original source was for that information. Then you can go to that original source, read the information there to make sure that it was quoted accurately on Wikipedia, and then you can cite that original source. So it's an aggregator to help you find information. It's basically like utilizing, if you were, you know, looking up an article back in the 1980s, you wanted to look up a Time magazine article, they would put out like these indexes of Time and tell you where to go find that article and what issue. So it's basically indexing those stories about that topic and that information. But the difference is with Wikipedia, you still have to go and try to find that information. With AI, you can have it brought right to you. And that's kind of what its effectiveness can be as a research tool when it comes to writing. But you've got to trust but verify. And I would even say don't necessarily trust either until you've asked for that original source and gone back and made sure AI got it right. Because I've seen AI make stuff up all the time. It has a tendency, because it wants to give an answer, it doesn't want to respond back with, I'm sorry, I can't find anything on that, because that would hurt the effectiveness of people going back and using the tool. So instead, what it'll do is it'll tell you information that isn't true. And then you say, whoa, tell me where you got that information. Oh, I'm sorry, we can't find a source of that information. Okay, so you made it up. So it's not foolproof at all. But it sounds like, from the way it's being presented, that that's what this boy was doing. He was utilizing it as a shortcut on the research, not to write the article for himself. And that's actually what the purpose of AI is, to cut down on time and tasks that human beings have to do. And listen, as a writer and as an editor, I was against it from the beginning. I said, this is terrible. Like, this is why they're going to have us keep writing articles. Eventually, they'll just let the computers write the articles. Well, as it turns out, our company's been adamant that they don't want that to happen. They don't want to lose the human element of the stories that we tell. Not all companies are like that. There's probably a lot of media companies that you are reading that are giving you articles that were completely written by AI. And you start to see the telltale signs. And I'm assuming that this teacher that discovered that this young man was using AI either picked up on something or was run. It's quite possible that this teacher could be taking the stories, papers that are handed into them from the students, and running that through AI and telling me where would this information be found on the internet. Because another tool you can use AI for is plagiarism checking. Now, I've done that for years by, you know, if somebody writes something, I'm like, that doesn't sound like them. You copy and paste that into Google, the paragraph or so, and then it comes back as where the original source was. And you're like, this is supposed to be in quotation marks. Or, you know, this was just outright copied. Happens a lot, you know, with interns as they're still kind of learning what they can do and what they can't do. It's like, no, you can't copy all of that text. You can cite it, but you can't cite all of it. And I've learned so much about plagiarism rules since I started here. Because I thought plagiarism was taking somebody else's work without giving them credit. So that if you gave them credit, you could utilize as much of that information as you wanted. As long as you were quoting it and giving proper due to it. That's not the case. If you don't have a certain percentage of original thought in the writing, it's plagiarism. Just aggregating a bunch of information from somewhere is plagiarism, whether you cite it or not. Seeing an idea on another website and saying, you know what, I'm going to write my own version of that article is also plagiarism. I had no idea. I thought that was inspiration. So there's all these little things that you learn as you go along that you know, it's a much more nuanced thing than, and it's when somebody comes in to work here or is an intern here and they say, well, explain to me what plagiarism is. I have to go back to that old adage about pornography. I can't quite explain it, but I know it when I see it. And that's kind of the same thing with plagiarism. So how did this teacher detect that this boy was using AI, and why did she or he define that as plagiarism? But this is a question that is going to be plaguing, no pun intended, all of the teachers going forward. And this case is actually quite important because what a judge decides in this lawsuit will determine what plagiarism rules are made going forward, I think. I hope that we can find a balance where AI can be used as a tool, but that it isn't abused. First of all, because AI written articles are boring. We need to have that human element in them. We need to have that little part in Barry's article where you say, ah, oh, Barry, you were writing a great article about the history of New Bedford. Then you had to insert a pro-Trump message. Come on, man. You know, if you're somebody that doesn't like that. Or you read one of my articles and you'd be like, oh, I thought I was reading a story about sandwiches. And all of a sudden he mentions ghosts. Stupid Weisberg. So, you know, like those human elements are what makes the story interesting. Otherwise, what's the point of having a story? Just put raw information up. If it's not going to be engaging, who's going to want to read it? 508-996-0500. App chat, open line voicemails on the WBSM app. A little bit later on today, we will call our $30,000 winner from our Money Talks contest. So you're going to want to stay tuned for that. We will also continue giving away tickets to see Lawrence the Band, which you can enter at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app to try to win tickets to see them. November 2nd, I believe it is, at MGM Music Hall at Fenway. And then, of course, we'll have plenty to discuss this morning. Including this story about the fake leaves, the fake foliage photos. And how that is affecting people in the areas where people come to see the leaves. The leaf peepers are showing up and they're not happy. That it doesn't look like the photos they saw on Instagram. By the way, if you saw pictures of leaves that somebody took this weekend and you're like, wow, those are beautiful. We have to get there next weekend. Just be aware that those leaves will probably fall off the tree by then. They're dead leaves. That's why they change color. Anyway. 508-996-0500. Let's take a break here and we'll be back in a few moments. Till you walk through my door. Well, how do you know when you're dealing with a true blue foliage photo, right? Because apparently the foliage photo game on the internet has been severely impacted by thousands of heavily edited and sometimes fake photos created with artificial intelligence that, according to the WCVB, only a local can tell apart from the real thing. One local photographer in Vermont said that it's not natural. Other than a sign here and there, I don't heavily edit my photos at all. What he probably means there is, you know, he probably takes a photo of a landscape that has like a road sign in it, and then he just takes the road sign out. And, you know, I've done that to photos. We have that ability. There's been times that I've had to take a photo of something that we need for a story, and there's a car in the way. Or maybe, you know, I'm going to have to blur the car's license plate out, because we just do that anyway. If they're caught in the photo, no reason to put them in the photo. And sometimes it's just easier to remove the car. But these photographers who have been taking photos of foliage for decades, they tell you it could take hundreds of tries to get the right shot. But meanwhile, it takes AI just seconds to produce these fake foliage photos. So they create these photos, they put them out on social media, and they say, oh, here's where I took this photo. And then people flock to that area, and then when they get there, they say, wait a minute, this photo doesn't look anything. My photos don't look anything like those photos that were taken. What am I doing wrong? Well, probably it wasn't anything that you did. Granted, every camera has different settings and every photographer has a different eye, but it's probably not something you're doing. It's probably that the photo was artificially enhanced. And you arrive there and you say, well, I'm going to get these perfect photos for Instagram. And then it doesn't look anything like that. So then you go ahead and you edit them to try to make them look better. And then you're just as guilty as the person that put the fake photos up the ledge there in the first place. And now there's not an accurate representation of what the foliage looks like in that area. Now, I think many, many people who are leaf peepers and who go to see the foliage, it's not necessary for them about the photos. For them, it's more about the experience, what they're going to see with their own eyes. But let's just say you had somebody who is doing their engagement photos and they wanted to have like a perfect fall backdrop, and they see a photo and they say, this is where I want to go to take our engagement photos. And it's 2 hours away. So they get in the car, they drive 2 hours. The photographer they hired gets in the car, drives 2 hours. They get to the site, they set up the shoot. It doesn't look anything like it did in the photos they found. Now they've wasted time and money. So what do? You just take a photo in front of what you have and try to enhance it? Or do you go somewhere else? They'll probably take a photo in front of what they have and then enhance it, which only perpetrates the myth even more. So how does this, you know, really negatively impact anybody? Well, think about folks that must drive for 2 or 3 hours to get to these places. They get there, it doesn't look like the photos, and then they take it out on the locals. You're falsely advertising what it looks like up here. No, we're not. We didn't take those photos. And really, fake photos can cause a lot, like just for an example. If you're selling something online, people want to see a photo. You know, gone are the days where you just put up a description and somebody meets you and takes a look at it and says whether they want it or not. They want to see photos. And for the longest time, what people were doing was, well, it's this model. And they would take a photo from like Amazon and put that up on the listing. And folks would say, no, I want to see the actual item. everybody has a phone in their camera in their phone, you should be able to send a photo. Then they have to take a photo of the actual item. It doesn't look as good as it should. And then they just mess with it to make it look better. And then when you get there, it doesn't look anything like it did in the photos they sent. Like, I took a photo yesterday. I bought a leather jacket when I was out thrifting yesterday. Nice jacket. Took a photo of myself in the store with the jacket on. Really, so I could see what it looks like, because there was no mirror. And then I posted a photo of me in the jacket, but I took the background out. I took myself out of the background and just put it in front of a black background. Now, it's still me. I didn't change the way I look. I didn't change the way the jacket looks. I just changed the background. To me, that's not falsifying anything. The focus was supposed to be on, what do you think of this jacket, people? Should I wear it or not? But then you'll have people who will manipulate images in a different way. I did this a couple of years ago. You know, WrestleMania was on April 1st, and I wanted to play an April Fool's joke on social media, so I put a photo of myself outside of Reliant Stadium and said, oh, it's great to be here at WrestleMania, my first WrestleMania, whatever. And it looked pretty real, and I just made it with Canva. I just took a photo of myself, cut myself out of the photo, removed the background, and then just dropped myself in front of a Google Maps photo of Reliant Stadium. And people believed it. People were like, oh, I'm here too. We should meet up. So, I mean, that was for a prank, but there are people who do that all the time. There was a fascinating documentary on Max a few years ago about the Instagram culture and the way that people falsely enhance their photos, their looks, the way they appear in the photos, where the photos were even taken. So it's like, oh, it's so great to be here in, you know, Aruba, sitting by the hotel pool. But then when you look, they've really just cropped the picture and they're actually at the hotel pool at the Motel 6 in their town. They're trying to put out a fake lifestyle because they think that's going to win them more followers and therefore more endorsements. And it's gotten to the point where you kind of have to believe what people say when you say you can't believe everything you see online. Memes get passed around as real images. But that is usually a mistake on the part of the person sharing it. When you see somebody intentionally putting out a falsified photo, that's more of an issue of, you know, it's them trying to hoax you for whatever purpose. And unfortunately, the biggest reason a lot of that stuff happens online is just because people want to come across as looking better than. Like, I don't care that you went to Aruba, but they think that if they promote the fact that they were in Aruba and they get a lot of likes, a lot of comments, then say the hotel is going to, hotel in Aruba is going to say, well, next time come stay with us and we'll comp you the stay if you promise to take some photos and put them on social media, because that's marketing for them. Marketing for them at a very low cost. Because you're just trading out a room to somebody who has millions of Instagram followers versus, you know, buying a television ad where a couple of thousand people might see it. So the whole thing has become so artificial that it's hard to know what's true and what isn't. I see so many of my friends posting glowing reviews of movies and glowing reviews of products. But what they're not telling you is they went to that movie for free at the invite of the studio. They were sent those products for free in exchange for promoting them. Well, then why do I believe any of your commentary on any of these things? You're a paid shill. Now, some people on social media have kind of looked at it the same way I look at things here. I'm not endorsing something that I don't believe in. There's people that have said, oh, we want you to do this commercial. Nah. Let's see if somebody else here uses that product or frequents that client. I'm not really comfortable promoting something that I don't, and it's not that I'm against it. It's just I'm not familiar with it. Like, you know, when I talk about the butcher shop, it's because I love the food at the butcher shop. You know, if I talk about Dash Laundromat, it's because I'm having them do my laundry, which reminds me, I got to go into the Dash app and schedule a pickup. But too many of the people on social media, because they don't have a job like I have, where that's something that you do as part of your job, they need to get as many of those as they can. And so they'll just endorse anything and everything. And I learned my lesson about signing on for products that I didn't know and trust and believe in years ago, probably about 10 years ago now. There was a piece of ghost hunting equipment that was being advertised as the next big thing because it was going to combine all the devices that we use into one. And it was called the Ghost Arc. And when the developers told me about everything that was involved with it and gave me all the right answers to all the questions that I had, I was like, all right, let's work together. And so I became one of the endorsers of this product. And people ordered it at $400 a piece because of me and what I was saying about it. And then these things turned out to all be junk. None of them did what they said they were going to do. Most of them didn't even work. Some of them caused fires. I was one of the few people that actually got a functioning one. And the functioning one that I had, and still have, people have offered me money for it. I've said no for two reasons. One, it's kind of a collector's item now. And two, I'm not taking money for something that I know doesn't work the way that it's supposed to. But I had to come out and apologize to people and say, hey, I'm sorry. You know, they gave me all the right answers to all the questions. They showed me all the different stages of development. But then the final piece was so rushed because they were so behind on getting the orders out. I think they just threw all that to the wind and said, let's just get something on the market. And it turned out to be junk. So then I became really careful about what I get involved with. But there are too many people that don't have any ethics at all when it comes to those things. Because to them, more endorsements means more success as an influencer. And I don't ever want to be an influencer. I don't want to influence you to do anything. What I will do is I'll talk about my own experiences and promote products and people and businesses that I like and trust and hope that you will frequent them as well. But if I talk about the butcher shop and somebody sends an app chat message and says, well, this butcher shop is so much better than the one you're talking about, you should go there. I'm like, well, that's fine. You can go there. But I'm telling you about the reasons why I like to go to the butcher shop. And I'm just using them as an example. But I think you will find there's a lot of hollowness in these social media influencers. A lot of this. So if let's just say a camera company comes out with a new camera and they send it out to 50 investigators. Influencers. They send out to 50 influencers. Those 50 influencers are going to be saying the same thing because they're reading off the script that was sent to them. You know, I have multiple friends that get selected to go to Patriots games because they have influencers go to Patriots games to try to drum up interest on social media. And they're posting the same videos of the same touchdown. They're sitting in the same section because they're just trying to reach that individual person's audience. And sure, it should be something that they can utilize their social media to capitalize on. They've built a following. They should be able to utilize it as such. But there should also be some truth behind it and some actual feeling instead of just reading the script they're giving you. 508-996-0500. I've got to take a break here. We'll be right back. Of course, as from the original motion picture soundtrack of Xanadu, that is Olivia Newton-John, who passed away in 2022 from breast cancer. And October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month, and WBSM is teaming up with PrimaCare in an effort to prevent, identify, and cure a disease that strikes 1 in 8 women in the United States and also some men as well. A simple mammogram can be your best weapon in the fight against breast cancer, allowing for early detection and the best chance for successful treatment. Breast self-examination should begin at age 20, with yearly breast exams from 20 to 39, and yearly mammography screenings from age 40 on. Awareness, detection, treatment, cure, that's the key to beating this disease. Breast Cancer Awareness Month on WBSM is brought to you by PrimaCare, by your side. And certainly, you know, our thoughts and support go out to anybody that is dealing with breast cancer, not just in October, but all year. But this is the month that we focus on the awareness to help ensure that women, and again, less commonly in men, but that women stay healthy. All right, I've got to take one more break here before the end of this hour. We will be right back. And welcome back in. Vacation, that's the song there. And Phil Devitt is on vacation, but he'll be back tomorrow bringing you local news. We'll have ABC News coming up for you in just a moment, though. And the weather from Ceci Del Carmen from ABC6. On the other side, too, more of your phone calls, 508-996-0500. App chat, open line voicemails in the WBSM app. We will also, later on this morning, speak to our $30,000 winner from our Money Talks contest. So one lucky person out there is getting a phone call and 30 grand. So if that's not you, though,